This is the 82nd Airborne Division, fearless among fighting units.
From Fort Bragg, home of the Airborne and the center of the military universe, this is the All-American Legacy Podcast.
Go!
An inside look at the 100-year history of the 82nd.
They are All-American all the way.
He was just a rookie trooper, and he surely shook with pride. He checked all his equipment and made sure his pack was tight. He had to sit and listen to those awful engines roar.
You ain't gonna jump no more. Gory, gory, what a hell of a way to die. Gory, gory, what a hell of a way to die. Gory, gory, what a hell of a way to die. He ain't gonna jump no more. Zoom, zoom.
Is everybody happy? Cried the sergeant looking up. Our hero feebly answered yes, and then they stood him up. He jumped into the icy blast, his static line and hook,
and he ain't gonna jump no more. Gory, gory, what a hell of a way to die. Gory, gory, what a hell of a way to die. Gory, gory, what
Welcome back to the All-American Legacy Podcast. This is Lieutenant Colonel Joe Bacino. That was Blood on the Risers by the All-American Chorus. Today, we're talking about the 82nd Airborne Division's parachute assault into Sicily during World War II, codenamed Operation Husky. This is Episode 10, Fire in the Sky. A little bit of a different format today. For today's show, I am the one answering the questions rather than asking them. I was interviewed by Angus Wallace for this episode. Angus is a British World War II historian and the host of World War II Pod. He's been featured on the History Network, and he spent a lot of time covering Operation Husky, but never from the perspective of the airborne insertion. So what we're talking about today is the division's first airborne assault and the first major combat airborne operation in American history. We should explain the title. We always try to go with an attention-grabbing title, and today's show is Fire in the Sky, which is a reference to the Friendly Fire incident we will talk about here. Many paratroopers and the pilots carrying them were shot down over Gela, the Sicilian beach on the Mediterranean coast. So, last week we spoke about the 82nd's conversion to an airborne division in 1942. At that time, the division was commanded by Major General Matthew Bunker Ridgway, the 6th commander in division history, and the 1st commander of the 82nd as an airborne division. Ridgway is a central figure not just in this episode, but also in 82nd history. Our current division headquarters in Fort Bragg is named after Ridgway, Ridgway Hall, and it was under his command that the division was reformed in an airborne configuration, and he commanded the division at this point in the war. One thing that I found interesting here in researching this subject and in talking to Angus is that Ridgway did not jump into Sicily with his paratroopers. He watched the airborne assault from a ship at sea. That's a little bit at odds of how we think of Ridgway, but we talk about some of the reasons that Ridgway did not jump into Sicily. And one of the other things we talk about here is the training that Ridgway had the All-American paratroopers do in North Africa. The division moved to North Africa to prepare for the airborne assault into Sicily, and they trained on airborne operations. We spoke with Bob Miller, a private first class with the 505th Parachute Infantry Regiment during Operation Husky, and he talked to us a little bit about some of the training. Here's a story he had to tell us about the training that they did in North Africa.
Well, at that time, I was a PFC. We bounced around. They gave us 2 days to get acclimated and everything else to the heat of the desert and the cold of the nights. And then we started training. I think we did 3 practice jumps 2 weeks before it started. We had some casualties on the jump. A couple of the boys got killed. A couple of them landed on some of these cactus trees that they had there with long spear leaves that went right through their bodies, and there was nothing we could do about saving them. And that was the indoctrination to death. And of course, you looked at it and you shrugged and you said, well, there for the grace of God go I. And that was it.
So a pretty harrowing memory from one of our paratroopers, and Angus and I talk a little bit about some of the hazards of the training in North Africa. Here is some newsreel footage from late in 1943 highlighting the division's participation in Operation Husky.
Blowing up clouds of desert dust, they took off from North Africa and headed out over the blue ocean. Ahead was their first combat jump. They were to drop into Sicily behind enemy lines, ahead of an Allied invasion that was coming in by sea. The men of the 82nd advanced 150 miles in 6 days. The German and Italian defenders were routed, but not without hard fighting. The Sicilian campaign was the first combat proof that American airborne doctrine was valid. The fighting quality of its paratroopers was made dramatically clear.
So just to set this up, at this point in the war, General Eisenhower was looking for a way to insert the Allies into Fortress Europe. And the airborne assault into Sicily was a big part of that. Operation Husky was a critical moment in the life of the 82nd Airborne Division. This is the first time our Army did this. This large airborne operation went horribly wrong, and after Husky, Eisenhower almost scrapped the whole idea of the Airborne Division. So Angus and I get into that in some detail. We also talk about what saved the 82nd as an airborne division. And with that set up, let's go right to my discussion with Angus Wallace.
If we're looking at the 82nd airborne element of Husky, it's probably worth looking at the 82nd themselves.
Yes.
They were only recently designated airborne.
Right. Yeah.
Entering into World War II, this was a new thing, at least for the Americans. But, you know, the Germans had success, had some success with airborne forces. And this was an idea that, you know, a small group of officers in our army were trying to emulate. And then, you know, the Germans, you know, strangely, the Germans at Crete, this was a successful operation at Crete, but it was... It's teetered on success, you know, and was so sort of close to failure that it's that really the Germans had no real appetite to continue this afterwards. But it sparked the Allies to try to build up this capability. And so the Army was pulling divisions, you know, out of the reserves to stand them back up into the active component. Into the active force for World War II, and had to identify a division for this capability, and the 82nd was identified. So the 82nd was mobilized for World War II as a standard infantry division, and then the decision was made to transition the 82nd to an airborne division.
I mean, how were they envisaged to be used? A similar sort of lines to the Germans? I mean, were they basing what they thought the need was going to be on, say, Crete?
What's interesting about Crete is that it was the end of the German airborne experience, but it was the start of, in many ways, it was the start of the American airborne experience in combat. I guess it was just two different ways of generals looking at this thing. You know, from the German experience, there's, well, we're never doing this again. There's too little ability to control this thing. There's too many things that can go wrong. And from the American experience, it was, well, this is a capability that we can really used to reinforce our divisions. And so that was kind of initially how they were going to be used. There was a sort of debate, and we saw this debate actually play out throughout World War II, whether they would be a tactical capability, which is really how they were kind of used in Husky, tactical meaning that they're dropped close inland and they take key terrain, or whether they're a strategic capability like in in Operation Market Garden, where they're dropped miles and miles from the objective. I think really St. Mary Glace and Normandy really kind of split those two, but there was a debate about how they would be used, you know, tactically or strategically, or whether they would be used to reinforce an objective that was already secured. And we saw that in Salerno, actually. So that would be another way of using the airborne force, that they would reinforce an objective, that they would not do a contested entry. They would not do a forced entry. They would very quickly reinforce something that was already secured. So that really doctrinal argument was never settled, and never even got settled during the war.
So Husky was going to be the first really large scale drop for them. But just prior to that, there was some drops at Torch, wasn't there? How had they gone? Was anything drawn out from that?
Nothing was too drawn out. It was such a small operation, and it was so insignificant to the success at Torch that there was no real, there was nothing that really could be applied to something on the scale of Husky. There was a battalion in Operation Torch in North Africa. There was a battalion, the 509th Parachute Infantry Battalion, that participated. That was the first parachute assault in U.S. history.
It's funny because the only note I sort of found was that, you know, that poor weather resulted in the wrong drop zone, as we'll say. That becomes familiar throughout all the airborne drops. So when they decide to go into Sicily and Husky, why did they feel they needed the airborne? What was their initial objectives?
The 82nd would be part of a massive airborne assault the night before, the night of the 9th, 9 July, and reinforce the 1st Infantry Division, really set the conditions for the 1st Infantry Divisions in the Jela sector by cutting lines of communication and disrupting routes for the Italian forces and for what turned out to be the Hermann Göring Division, although the 82nd did not know that the Italian forces were reinforced by the Hermann Göring Division. And then later, they were to effect link up with General Terry De La Mesa's 1st Infantry Division at the Ponte Oliva airfield. So those were, in a broad sense, the objectives for the 82nd Airborne Division. What General Patton and General Eisenhower hoped that the 82nd would do was really just slow down the ground forces there in Sicily for the 1st Infantry Division. And by and large, the 82nd actually did, despite all the problems with getting getting to the objective and getting on the ground.
Yeah. Well, getting on the ground is actually their first thing they had to get over. And something that had never occurred to me was the availability of aircraft being a problem to get so many on the ground, with the British also fighting for aircraft, because the 82nd, I think, were almost cut out of the operation and sent to be used as a reserve fighting with the British.
Yeah, most of the division actually was used as reserve, but yeah, they were almost cut out, and they were sort of an afterthought when in terms of allocating aircraft. So they had to reduce, you know, General Ridgway, the commander of the 82nd, had to reduce the number of paratroopers committed to Sicily because there just were not enough aircraft to go around.
When we talk about the aircraft, I mean, they weren't permanently designated for this use. I mean, how much cooperation between the airborne troops and the troop carrier pilots and the whole of that organization was put in place before? Had they practiced? Do they come as a package?
They practiced more than we think. So the 52nd Troop Carrier Wing was scheduled to carry the 82nd from North Africa to Sicily, and they had trained together at Fort Bragg. But it is worth noting, and it is, I guess, well documented in history, that during that training, you know, General Ridgway noted that the 52nd Troop Carrier Wing is not capable of conducting night operations. He was concerned about that. That concern kind of went unheeded. And he did make that known to both Eisenhower and Patton before 9 July 1943, but the decision was made to go through with the night drop anyway. Largely, you know, at the time, I think in understanding some of these decisions, we've got to understand that there was a greater willingness to accept casualties than you will ever see in any modern, any current day operation.
Yes, well, that's true. So did they train at all for night drops once they knew it was on the cards?
Really, they had no real way to train this kind of operation at night. So they just had no way to replicate it. So not in the way that they trained, you know, for Salerno, which was a dusk drop. Not really.
I hadn't realized that. I presumed that they trained quite a lot for it, because it somehow seems obvious that you would use them at night. Sort of really does sort of explain things somewhat.
Well, so they did that. In North Africa, the division did two regimental sized jumps. Those were problematic, you know, and they never replicated the full conditions of Sicily. But even those were problematic. You know, the pilots in some of those cases dropped the paratroopers at the wrong drop zone. Leading into Sicily, I think, leading into Operation Husky, it was clear that there were going to be some problems. It was clear to Ridgway, at least, Ridgway and Gavin.
Had they done anything to counter the fact that they, if it's going to be clear to them that there was going to be problems with getting people to the right spot, had they done anything to prepare people for being misdropped?
They did. The 82nd did, yes. So one of the reasons that the 82nd was selected, the 82nd Division was selected for this airborne capability was because of General Ridgway. General Ridgway and Omar Bradley. And so they had prepared the division to operate in small groups, to operate independently. This is before they were selected for an airborne capability, and to exercise disciplined initiative. And that is what the airborne needed. So that's one of the reasons why they were selected, was that Ridgway had them trained so well to operate in small groups. And you saw that in Sicily, that if they just got onto the ground, if they got to the drop zone, they could find one another and they could, you know, as General Patton said, they could wreak havoc. Or I think, you know, one of the Italian officers said they would introduce mischief.
Despite the fact that many of us landed many miles from the drop zone, the invasion proved the wisdom of our paratrooper training. From the beginning, we were taught to fight in small groups and behind enemy lines. Our purpose was to disrupt communication lines, divert enemies' attention, and create general havoc in area where we were least expected to be. When we were isolated from the main force, we didn't panic. We regrouped in twos and threes, then proceeded to seek out and attack the enemy. Avoiding superior forces that might have overwhelmed us, we nonetheless fought aggressively and killed many times our own numbers. We didn't fight by the book or wait to receive orders from headquarters. In an atypical situation, we improvised, as we had been taught to do.
So, you know, we call that, in today's vernacular, we call that friction. Introduce friction into the battlefield. And if you can introduce friction, you can slow things down. They slowed down the Hermann Göring division in Sicily. All things being equal, whoever overcomes friction the best and the quickest is likely to have more success. So that was the idea, but it was understood that there would be a high casualty rate from the 82nd Airborne Division if this even worked. You know, if this even worked, of getting them onto the drop zone.
So yeah, we've touched upon this. The first problem is getting them to the drop zone. What problems did they have? How did they get on?
Well, you know, so 9 July. The evening of 9 July was when they departed North Africa for Sicily. And right before, you know, this is in Gavin's diary, General Gavin's diary, Colonel Jim Gavin at the time, in his diary, that right before the door closed on his aircraft, somebody stuck their head in and said, "We've got 35 mile an hour winds east to west. So you would never conduct an airborne operation in those conditions today." You know, he prepared for hard landing, but once the aircraft took off, you know, that wreaked havoc on the pilot's ability to calculate time and distance, because they calculated those things based on – they calculated how far they were based on how long they were flying. And so they were moving at a slower distance because of the wind. The wind was pushing them. And so the other problem was the sun started to set as they kind of were in the air, you know, if you couldn't see the tip of the wings of the aircraft in front of you, you couldn't see the aircraft at all. So they were broken up into smaller groups. One of the identifying terrain features was Malta. Some of them didn't quite know they were over Malta. Some of them mistook Sicily for Malta. There was kind of just mass confusion there.
I've read somewhere that half of them failed to reach their rally points once they were dropped. So that, they really are scattered everywhere.
So they got scattered everywhere. You know, Gavin really had no idea where he was. And then, you know, the other thing was that a lot of them were dropped onto hard terrain, so they were injured or they were killed on the landing. You know, on 10 July at 0245 is when the main amphibious assault was scheduled to go. So the 82nd Airborne Division was to drop ahead of that time. And once they got there, they were scattered everywhere. You know, they'd been blown off course by the winds. So even the ones that were dropped over the right drop zone, they were blown further off of the drop zone. It was chaotic. But to their ultimate credit, you know, they operated in what's known as little groups of paratroopers. They arrived in the drop zone. They found one another. They found other paratroopers, even those that they had not directly trained with. And they started to cut communication lines. They started to find the tanks of the Hermann Göring Division. They began to find the soldiers of the Hermann Göring Division. They took high ground. You know, they slowed things down, certainly, for the Germans and the Italian forces. They slowed the German Italian forces down.
It's like Gavin marching to the sound of gunfire because he had no idea where he was himself.
Right. He had no idea where he was himself, and he did not know that the Germans had reinforced Sicily with the Hermann Göring Division. Yeah, so he marched to the sound of the guns, and he had six people with him. So he kind of took six people, the six people he found, and they just started to introduce friction.
But they did manage to cause trouble. He did manage to link up later when day broke. He did manage to find more of his own people, and this pulled together a scratch force.
Right, right. Yeah, as the day of 10 July wore on, they gathered into larger and larger forces and actually began to secure the objectives that they were sent to secure. You know, one of the things Colonel Gavin was the commander of the 505th Parachute Infantry Regiment, and before on the night of 9 July when the paratroopers were getting ready. Yeah, I think this was initially just a math problem for the War Department. Was we were running out of soldiers. We have these soldiers committed to this capability. Is this a wise decision to continue?
It is an interesting argument, that the whole view of it afterwards, whether it was a success or not a success, or was it worth, you know, an experiment that was worth carrying on with? And in some respects, you know, Normandy's not a million miles different, because again, they got scattered, but again, they formed into their small pockets and caused repeated isolated problems.
Right, and again, Normandy would have been a success without the 82nd Airborne Division. We just would have taken more casualties. You just have to look at that in reviewing the history of the 82nd in World War II. Many of the same questions are asked today. Do we need this capability? Why do we retain this capability at a division size? Is it worth it? Does it still make sense to go into, you know, with all of the you know, with all the air defense equipment that is out there in the world, does it still make sense? And, you know, if you need to get a force in, it's too late to make something. It's too late to make an airborne division. You've got to have this thing ready and trained. So, you know, that's the other thing. I think I told you this, is that I tell people is that, you know, we have paratroopers that have like 100 jumps, 120 jumps, and then, you know, they're just training to do it in combat. They've never done it in combat. But the jump in Sicily was Gavin's fifth jump. And for a lot of these guys, it was – I mean, they were all in single digits. For a lot of these guys, it was their fourth. Some people, it was their eighth. But they hadn't done this a lot in training.
You're jumping out of a plane at night. You're jumping out of a plane over somewhere that you don't quite know what's below you. You might not be jumping out at the right correct height, so the ground might be on you faster than you expect. And it's your fourth, fifth jump. It's no wonder there was so many injuries.
So the wind – and plus the winds were – you know, you're looking at 30-knot winds and above – and here, I think on Fort Bragg, I think the standard is like 12 knots. You can't jump above 12 knots. That's an incredible wind for that kind of material.
I wonder why they never called it off, or if they just were, it was just not thought, you know.
Well, no, I just think that it was understood that there were going to be a lot of casualties, and if this worked, it worked. You know, that's in it's in one of the books, one of the Eisenhower books, that Eisenhower's notion was this may not work, all these airborne paratroopers will get killed, but it'll certainly be a distraction type thing.
Is there anything that they learned from the back of, well, really the Second World War experience of these jumps that has been carried on into today's training?
Oh, you know, well, the LGOPS concept, little groups of paratroopers, that's something that is in our DNA. That's something that we have to be able to do, and that we did.
How does that work?
Just the idea of disciplined initiative. So you get to the drop zone, you establish link up with your other paratroopers, and you have a general understanding of your objectives. You have your understanding of your objectives, and then you accomplish your objectives. So if you think about a traditional military force, things are always very regimented, and you've got Patton out front pointing out where to go, and you've got General Terry De La Mesa giving orders. That's not the case with an airborne force. You know, you've got to be able to make decisions at the lowest level, and that is unique. That's unique to, that was always unique to the 82nd Airborne Division.
Was there anything else that came out that sort of carried across?
I think it's not really fully understood how contentious this was, though, coming out of Sicily, that there was a real move to make the 82nd a standard infantry division and not an airborne division. There was a notion in the War Department that it didn't make any sense to have a full division of airborne capability.
Well, it's curious, at the end of the war, that was the end of it, sort of, for the parachute itself as a technology, but then obviously the helicopter came in to do essentially the same job, but could deliver people with a bit more of a surgical skill, a little less randomness.
You know, in October 1943, the War Department published a training circular 113, Employment of Airborne and Troop Carrier Forces, which described in a little bit greater detail the procedures for planning, coordination, execution, and really the coordination between the air and the sea as paratroopers were en route. The discussion after that, if that was published, was, are these a strategic asset, like in Market Garden, or are they a tactical asset, like in Normandy? How do we use these forces? And I think, like I said at the top, that argument was never fully solved. Other than to say that, you know, there was a wide range of ways that you can employ this division. And as there are now, as you know, that's still true now. You can use the 82nd in something like Haiti, where you can, you know, humanitarian assistance, where you can get something in very quickly. Or in Katrina, you know, you have this division that has this airborne capability, and they're ready all the time because they have the airborne capability, so they can do an air-land and go in somewhere and do a humanitarian assistance or support to civil authorities. Or, obviously, you know, full-scale combat, like in Panama, where you can put a force in within 18 hours and begin a high-intensity conflict.
Joe, I think we'll leave it there. Thank you.
So that was my conversation with Angus Wallace about Operation Husky. And in closing this out, I'm out here in Sicily drop zone on Fort Bragg right now to close this thing out. It's March 7th, 2017. It's the middle of the day. There's no one out here. I guess I thought this was going to be a better idea than it really is, to do this out here in Sicily drop zone. But, you know, when I look out on the drop zone, it's an empty drop zone right now. I think about all of the safety procedures we have and all of the training and all the knowledge about how to do airborne operations that we have in the 82nd Airborne Division now. And I realize we did not have that. Our paratroopers did not have that back then. This was an incredibly dangerous endeavor, and no one really knew if it was going to work. I hope that people listening to this understand that from this episode. And our paratroopers did it anyway. And, you know, there's a real personality in the division and in the 505th that lives in the 82nd right now. And, you know, we honor our forebears when we live that personality, when we live that courage. I just want to close one thing out here, just close this out with this. This is a quote from Edwin Sayre. Edwin Sayre commanded Alpha Company 505th. He earned a Distinguished Service Cross from Operation Husky. And this is from his memoirs of Operation Husky. Regardless of anything that may go wrong on an operation, if the small unit commander knows his job, his missions, and the missions of other units in the operation, and has the physical and mental courage to try to accomplish the mission, regardless of the obstacles that may confront him, the overall operation will be a success. So that really is disciplined initiative, the idea of little groups of paratroopers, and the idea of personal courage. You know, that really does live in the division today. So I hope you enjoyed this episode. It was a little bit longer, but, I hope everybody enjoyed it. And thanks for listening. Airborne all the way.